It's good to see each of you present for our this Tuesday evening service. I lose track of the days in a week like this. But glad that we can be here tonight. I think sometimes during the weeknight lessons in a series of lessons like this, we sometimes think that the people that are present are just those who didn't have anything else to do. You know, those who had something else to do aren't here, and we just didn't have anything else we could do, so this is what we do by default. That's obviously not the case. I know that there are any number of things that you could have been doing tonight and that some of you have made sacrifices to be here. And that is so much appreciated. Certainly, I appreciate it, but much more than that, it's an indication of your desire to put first things first, and our Lord is honored by that kind of commitment. We're going to be talking tonight about overcrowded lifestyles. There are a lot of people concerned about that in the world today. There's sort of a simplicity movement out there in our culture where a lot of people are recognizing that life has gotten more complicated than we can easily manage, and that being too busy and having lives that are too complicated has detrimental consequences, even in terms of the things of this world. So it's a problem, but we want to think about it tonight, not just from the standpoint of needing to relax because that's more conducive to our physical health and those kinds of things. We want to think about it as one of the weapons that the devil is able to use in this age in which we live to try to hinder us spiritually and to obstruct what the Lord wants to be doing in our lives. And so we're going to be talking about the spiritual problem of being too busy to put first things first. And I want to begin by reading the 23rd Psalm. And as I read this, more than any of the individual statements that are made, I want you just to think in your mind about the general picture that this psalm conveys. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I don't know about you, but that psalm conveys a picture of stillness and quietness. And David would have been, in his age, as busy as any of us are. Been busier than most of us are. He was a king over a considerable kingdom. And so David, as a previous shepherd, knew about quiet pastoral scenes and the stillness that's associated with that. But David here, I think, speaks of a calmness that was at the center of his soul, despite what stresses and strains may have been his duty to attend to as the king of Israel. David had a relationship with the Lord that was conducive to the kind of quietness and, I'll even use the word, simplicity of life that is so very important. That image of stillness in that psalm contrasts with the way many of us live our lives. Remember the famous passage in Macbeth, Shakespeare's Macbeth? Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. You ever feel like that describes your life? Full of sound and fury, and we wonder what it all might mean. I believe one of the most dangerous habits that any of us have right now that threatens us spiritually is our habit of overcommitting to too many activities. Saying yes too many times when we should have said no for our own spiritual welfare. And as we say, this is a problem of epidemic proportions in the world. We live in a world that's just busier and busier and busier all the time. Now, like most problems that are out there in the environment around us, this is one that has affected us as the Lord's people in regard to spiritual priorities. We tend to get in the same predicament of Martha, about whom the Lord said in Luke chapter 10, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her." What did he say? "You are worried and troubled about many things." I've made some reference to these other lessons that I do on reaching forward. And in those lessons, I talk about the fact that in that passage where Paul speaks of reaching forward, he says, "This one thing I do," forgetting the things that are behind and reaching forward. Not many of us can say, "This one thing I do." We'd have to say, "All these many things I dabble in." And life becomes a complex matter of things that where we just have to try to touch all the bases and deal with all of these things. And we really do sometimes end up in the predicament of Martha, where we are distracted by the complexity of our multiple priorities, many of which really are duties. They can't be totally neglected. But we get so caught in that net of activity that we really lose sight of that which is most important. Unlike some of the other problems that we talk about this week, the difficulty in dealing with this business of overcrowded lifestyles is not that we don't recognize we have it. And that's the problem with covetousness that we talked about on Sunday night. The difficulty there is we just don't see when we've gotten involved in that problem. Just the reverse is the case with overcrowded lifestyles. Everybody admits the problem. We all know that we've been caught in this difficulty, but what do you do about it? But I believe overcommitment is one of the main things responsible for the fact that many of the Lord's people, those who profess to be the Lord's people in this generation, just don't have as much spiritual vitality and effectiveness as we might if we weren't quite so busy with all of the things that we have to deal with. Our lifestyles, and I really hesitate even to use that word, but our lifestyles are just overcrowded. So what can we do to try to bring that back into focus and hopefully make some adjustments? Somebody asked me last night, "Gary, what do you do about these things? I don't offer you many specific suggestions in these lessons about what to do. I've made a few suggestions, but mainly I'm trying to call attention to the problem. In many cases, the solutions are obvious, but sometimes they're not. And I don't make many specific recommendations because I don't know exactly what's going on in your life. What you would need to do might not need to be the same thing that the person sitting next to you needs to do. The challenge is for us to see problems and then have the courage to see that some adjustments need to be made. And we will never get all of these things in perfect balance for any length of time and then just punch the autopilot button for the rest of our life and everything's fine. It's a matter of making constant adjustments. It's just like driving a car. If you notice your hands, you are constantly adjusting. And that's the only way we can hope to even approach balance in these matters, is to have the honesty to see when we veered off too far in one direction and make the specific, practical, concrete adjustments to bring it back. First thing you know, we will have veered off in the other direction. We will have overcorrected, and we'll need to correct back in that direction. So life in Christ is a matter of making many, many, many mid-course corrections. And I'm calling upon you and myself this week to see the need for those corrections. And if all you do and all I do at the end of these lessons is say, "Well, those things need to be talked about. Thanks, Brother Henry, for coming and beating up on us for a few days. We needed that. We feel chastised." And then we go away and it's just business as usual. And then we will have wasted our time. So what adjustments can we make in our lives? Regardless of what I need to do, what are you willing to do? Regardless of what you're willing to do, what am I willing to do? Let me connect this lesson, as we did last night. I want to connect this lesson to some of the other topics that we're talking about. We talked about materialism Sunday night and then our fascination with fun last night. This business of being too busy is connected to both of those. two of the primary reasons why we are overloaded and overcommitted is that, number one, we're spending an inordinate amount of time working and building a career and making money. And number two, we're often guilty of spending an inordinate amount of time on entertainment and recreation and sports and hobbies and crafts and travel and all of those things. You can't work as many hours as we work making money and then spend so many hours off of work recreating ourselves and not be too busy. The two previous lessons in this series are the two primary reasons why we are overcommitted. But when I talk about this, I find people reacting by saying, well, Gary, yes, I'm the first to admit that I'm in a crunch right now. I'm in a temporary time of being busier than I know is good for me, but this is temporary. It's going to slow down after I work my way through this crunch. And that's just very rarely true. In the first place, the situation is often not temporary. I think it must have been a politician who said, the most permanent thing in the world is a temporary arrangement. It's easy to make a temporary arrangement, but then it goes on and on and on, doesn't it? But even if the crunch that we're in right now, time-wise, is temporary, what happens as Americans live their lives is that we sail right out of one temporary set of busyness into another crunch. And the crunches get just back-to-back, so it becomes, for all practical purposes, a permanent situation. But even if it were temporary, I want to suggest that by the time we do slow down, we may well have missed one or more critical windows of opportunity, particularly in our relationships, that can never be gotten back, even if we do slow down later. And what about our children? The time in life when many of us, particularly those of us who are men, are the most busy is the time when our children are at their most formative stage. You can't get those years back, even if you do slow down after you've got your career well established. We lose those years, irreparable damage can be done. It's not a matter of having more time for our families later. For some things, by that time, it'll be too late. And the same thing's true about our relationship as spouses. James Dobson, in one of his books many years ago, simply said it this way, overcommitment is the number one marriage killer. Many of us are just too busy to spend the time that it takes, and you really do spell love, T-I-M-E, we are too busy to spend the time that it takes to nurture those marriage relationships. We are overcommitted and don't have the hours that have to go into nurturing and building a strong marriage relationship. So rather than rationalize all of that and make excuses, we need to realize what we are doing and make the necessary adjustments. Time for us to wake up, sober up, and be honest about the fact that we are trying to do more than a human being can do and remain spiritually strong. Same thing's true with our activities as it is with our money and material things. You know, our inability to say no strongly resembles an addiction. And I'm not so sure, but what many of us are more addicted to activities than we are money and material things. We just can't say no. If there's something I want to do, I either think I have to do it or I want to do it, and it's not wrong to do that, then I somehow think I've got a right to do everything I want to do, and there'll be some way to pack it all in there. I'll find a way to be more efficient. I'll find some kind of a way to do everything I either have to do or want to do. And that just is an impossible task. We lack self-discipline with respect to our activities and our involvements. We are overindulging. Rather than mastering our activities, they are mastering us. And really, there are two mistaken assumptions embedded in our thinking. We somehow think we have a right to do anything we want to do, as long as it's not sinful. And then secondly, and equally foolishly, we believe that there is somehow a way to do everything we want to do without any of our priorities suffering. We assume that if there's a problem, then it's just a matter of scheduling it properly and being efficient and organized, and we can somehow get it all in there. And the word sacrifice rarely comes into our vocabulary. If here is something that I think must be done or something that I very much want to do, the idea of simply letting go of that, though it will be a costly gift, it may hurt me deeply, it may cost me in my career, or I may not be able to do something I dearly wanted to do. The idea of sacrifice is letting go of something that is costly. It's not a convenience or an option. You're giving up something that really does significantly matter to you. Sacrifice means giving costly gifts. None of us gets any more than 168 hours a week. We cannot. You know, the person who thinks he can do everything that strikes his fancy has got a pretty meager fancy these days. There's, you know, all this stuff that's out there that's so enticing to do, we're like kids in a candy store. We want it all. We can't say no to it. The more complex our culture gets, and the more affluent our culture gets, the more the enticing possibilities are out there to be involved in this and do that and go here. Some choices have to be made about what we're going to do, and that will involve saying no to some things that we very much would like to do and might strongly profit from doing. Some choices have to be made. Some possibilities have to be let go. The irony is, by trying to do so much, we do really a less quality job than we would do if we tried to do a few things but gave ourselves to those things in a better way. I'll just say it this way. We end up giving the Lord only our leftover time, most of us. He only gets our time when really there's nothing else that is strongly competing for that same slot in our agenda books. I'm sure some of you have made sacrifices to be here tonight, and that makes me feel so good about you and who you are. But if that's the way you are, if you were willing to make a sacrifice, to let go of something that you either really wanted to do or something maybe even that there was some obligation to do, but this was even more important, and so you gave a costly gift in order to be here, I'm so proud of you. But I must tell you, my observation is that you're in a small minority among the Lord's people of our generation. Most of the Lord's people will only give that which is easy to give, either in money. When the collection plate comes by, they'll only give what they can easily afford to give. And when it comes to our time, our schedule books, we often will only give to the Lord time that is not being claimed by any other activity. And nowadays, when is that time? Between the hours of 3 and 4 in the morning? We're solidly booked up, and if the Lord only gets our leftover time, there's not much of that. It would be comical if it weren't so tragic to see elders in churches nowadays trying to find a time to have congregational activities when nothing else is going on. The premise is that we wouldn't dare schedule a gospel meeting if there were this activity going on or that activity going on. The premise is we've got to find a time to have the Lord's activities when nothing else is going on, because if anything else is going on, that will take priority and people won't come to the meeting. Well, when is that? When nothing else is going on. Elders have really got a challenge if they're going to try to find a time to have meetings and other activities when the members can come. When is that? Anymore, this, you know, the busyness runs from January through the end of December and every month in between. Anytime we would ask for people's attention in regard to the Lord's work, nowadays it's going to require some sacrifice for people to participate in that. We do with our time the very thing that we know would be wrong to do with our checkbook, and that is just to give from our surplus. You know, Lord, I'll give you this money because I really don't have any use for that $5 right now, but over here's all I've got to do, and so that's mine. We do the very same thing with our time. We give our leftovers, that which we really don't have much use for anyway. We may from time to time sacrifice financially for the Lord's work, but I know far fewer people who will let the Lord stand in the way of their doing anything that they really want to do. We are stingier with our time than we are with our money. And some of that may be because we have more money than we have time in this affluent age. I've worked with some nonprofit organizations where I had to do some fundraising. In these busy days, people will write you a check much more quickly than they will give you any of their time. You're working for a school organization, asking for parental involvement in a school activity. They say, can I write you a check and help you financially? That'll be much easier to do than to give you some of my time, because we only have a finite amount of time. Most of us, you know, have got a lot more money than that, so that's easier to do. But time, no, that would require sacrifice. And the word sacrifice just doesn't enter into our vocabulary when it comes to the use of our time. So it's a serious problem. But what are our priorities? What kind of value system are we working with? If the assumption is that if here's something, activity that has to do with the Lord's work, and it's trying to occupy this particular slot in my schedule book, and here is some recreational or maybe even some work activity that's trying to occupy the same slot, where do we get the assumption that the Lord's work is the optional thing, and so it can give? And the assumption always seems to be that when there's a scheduling conflict, that it will be the Lord's work that will always take a back seat to whatever else it is. I question that assumption. And I'm probably talking to the wrong people tonight. The people who need to hear this more are the ones whose seats are empty tonight, who had something else more important to do tonight. Tonight wasn't leftover time, and so it wasn't available for the Lord. You are here. You did make sacrifice to come, and so you understand this principle. We're being hurt in so many different directions by our overcommitment. It's not just an unpleasant problem in itself. It's one of those problems. The reason I included in this list of five problems that we're talking about this week is that it's not just a problem, but it's a problem that creates many other problems. This is a problem that hinders us in so many different ways, that this is a tool, this is a weapon the devil can use to get inside of our lives and start doing damage in a lot of other ways. For one thing, the busier we are, the harder it will be to remain vital spiritually. I believe our spiritual vitality has been diminished by our busy lifestyles. As a rule, and I'll say that, as a rule, as a generalization, but as a rule, a person cannot go at the pace we go at and remain strong spiritually. We don't take time out for the activities that are conducive to spiritual refreshment and growth. Eventually, our resources are going to run out, gospel preachers included. I struggle with this all of the time. Being too busy, even in the Lord's work, to remain strong spiritually myself. Not having the time to do the things that Gary Henry would have to do keep from running out of resources and being an accident waiting to happen. Many years ago, Gary Collins observed this in one of his books. Listen to this. Busyness, including busyness with religion and church activities, has been called the arch enemy of spiritual maturity. That sounds like an absurd statement, doesn't it? That even being busy with religion and church activities could be the arch enemy of spiritual maturity. But he says, busy lives have little time for reflection. Never-ending waves of activity keep us from thinking carefully about the important issues in our lives. God, relationships, the purpose of our lives, goals and service. Busyness can destroy relationships. It can stifle spiritual growth and keep us from becoming effective difference makers. Not a few of us are running on empty right now, spiritually speaking, because we're too busy ever to stop and be replenished. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that, and that's my personal judgment, that that's one reason why many, even among the so-called strongest of the Lord's people, are so vulnerable to temptation in our day, gospel preachers included. We've not taken the time, despite all of our busy gospel preaching and religious activities. We've not taken the time that it takes to build strong personal faith. And when the big crisis comes, we have little to draw on for strength and protection because we've been too busy, even as gospel preachers, to be strong in the Lord. That takes some quietness. That takes some stillness. That takes some time alone with the Lord, doing not much of anything but centering our hearts and our minds on our great God. Overcommitment is one of the reasons so many of us are so stressed out. You want to hear Gary Henry's definition of stress? Here's a Henry definition of stress. Stress is when your heart says, don't do it. Your priorities will suffer. But your mouth goes ahead and said, well, of course I'll do that. That creates stress. When heart says, say no, but mouth says yes, you create a very stressful situation. Folks, none of us are the exception to the rule that we can fail to take time for personal maintenance without serious consequences later on. People in the manufacturing world, in the business world, understand that you can't, in the name of productivity, run the machinery all out 24 hours of every day just because you don't have time. You know, if we take downtime to maintain the equipment, that's lost productivity. You can't run the machines all the time without disastrous consequences. It's true with physical machinery. It's true with the human machinery. God intends that we spend significant time studying the Scriptures and praying and, yes, even meditating upon Him. And no matter who we think we are, if we neglect the means that God has designed for our spiritual replenishment, we're not going to be strong spiritually. It's as simple as that. I was thinking just a few days ago about a young lady that I knew when I was in graduate school at Western Kentucky University many years ago. She was not a member of the Lord's Church, but she was somewhat of a religiously minded person, and she came by my apartment one afternoon to drop off something that she had borrowed from me, and I came out and speaking to her on the front porch, she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, nothing. I was doing some thinking. She said, what? I said, well, I really wasn't doing anything. I said, I was engaged in creative inactivity. She graduated as the valedictorian of our class at Western when we were undergraduate students. She didn't know much about inactivity of any kind. She was into constant, efficient work, 24/7. And I don't know where she is today, but she's probably a corporate executive somewhere, living the life that people live when they use themselves in that kind of a manner where the switch is always in the on position, is never in the off position. Well, I don't these days do as much creative inactivity as I used to, and I'm afraid my spiritual vitality suffers as a result. But not just our vitality and our spiritual strength. I believe we're not as even effective in spiritual activities as we would be if we didn't have so many activities going on, if we didn't try to do so much. Being overcommitted, we end up doing, having less commitment to what we do. Can't be overcommitted and have the kind of commitment that you would have to a smaller list of priorities. Obviously, our personal evangelism has suffered by virtue of the fact that we're so busy nowadays. We'll talk about this tomorrow night in our closing lesson, but we don't have time for that because we're too busy about other things. It's a tragic loss that frequent and spontaneous hospitality has been a casualty of our overcrowded lifestyles. Do you remember the day when it was possible just to drop in and visit somebody? Those days are gone, aren't they? If you were to be so bold as to just drop by somebody's house one evening, they looked out and they saw your car drive up. The blinds would close rather quickly and they would say, we got to turn out the porch light. Maybe they'll think we're not at home and go away. They didn't call ahead. They didn't book this. They didn't schedule this visit. What's going on here? We don't have time to visit. It's a tragic loss. And I know there's no turning back the hands of time. We can't go back to a simpler time. But I'm telling you, in the Lord's work, hospitality is a very important thing, and it ought to include more than just strictly regimented and scheduled times when we're going to do hospitality. We lose so much in our relationships when we don't have the time just to spend informal and maybe unanticipated and unorganized times together. One of the things that I regret about the increased shortening of gospel meetings in our age. The shorter a meeting is, the less opportunity there is during that week for just informal, spontaneous times of being together. And in my view, that's a big part of what makes a gospel meeting encouraging. A preacher may be able to do something from the pulpit, but an even greater good, I think, is done in those times in between services when there are spontaneous conversations. Maybe, would you like to get together for breakfast tomorrow morning? That wasn't on the meal schedule, but would you spend some time with me? Could we talk? And those aren't regimented. They aren't scheduled. They just come up. In a week-long meeting, you've got more breathing space in the schedule for that kind of thing, and it really adds to the value of what we come away with at the end of the week. We haven't just heard somebody lecturing to us. We've interacted with some real human beings in a way that nourishes us spiritually. But the busier we are, we don't have time for week-long meetings anymore, so we squeeze the time frame, and then that squeezes out many of the personal interactions that used to make gospel meetings such a refreshing experience. Another worrisome aspect of it to me is that the busier we are when it comes to the Lord's work, we are often unavailable to help when people needs arise. In the real world, people have needs that arise at inconvenient times and places, don't they? If you're going to help your fellow man, that always doesn't fall into a neat slot in your schedule book. And the same thing is true with our time, it's true with our money. With your money, if you spend every cent you make, you're not going to have any money to help somebody with when a spontaneous need arises to help somebody who's in need. If you spend every dollar you have, you're not going to have anything to help with. The same thing's true with our time. You spend every hour of it on your activities, it's unlikely that when some people need comes up that requires some of your time, you're not going to have any because you spent it all. You might be willing to help, but you can't. I've got this commitment to tend to and that commitment. What a tragic loss. And worst of all, our families have been hurt by our busyness. Nearly all of us are too busy for the good of our families. Even our children are being kept so busy that they can't be children anymore. They can't have those spaces, those wonderful spaces in life when we used to daydream and all of those things. Where is that? Where is that gone? We're turning them into little adults who have their own little miniature schedule books that are often as overbooked as ours. Shame on us. Parents, especially fathers, are we too busy to nurture our children? There have been some studies done that have had some pretty shocking results on how few seconds, and many of these studies are reported in terms of seconds, that fathers spend interacting with their small children on an average day. It's not minutes, it's seconds. Most fathers are totally out of touch with how little time they actually spend interacting verbally, one-on-one, in the presence of their children. But we can't. We're too busy. And I wouldn't even try to read to you because I wouldn't get through it. I would try to read to you Harry Chapin's Cats in the Cradle, which makes the point, but I wouldn't be able to get through it. And too often spouses, again, especially husbands, are too busy to nurture their mates. And too many of us think that the work that we're doing is so important to the world. And I don't have time, after trying to save the world, to spend on these individuals that I'm living at the same address with. My work is so important. A man makes a poor choice if he chooses to invest himself even in humanity rather than his family. Dag Hammarskjöld, whose insights I've always enjoyed, he was Secretary General of the United Nations many, many years ago, he said, "It is more noble to give yourself completely to one individual than to labor diligently for the salvation of the masses." I've had a great crisis about this in my own personal life just within the last few months. And if you can help me with this, I would appreciate any help you could give me with this. But at present, my work involves largely traveling and speaking to audiences like we're doing this week. I'm on the road 20 to 25 weeks a year. I don't know how many people I speak to in a year's time, but it would be in the thousands. You add up all of those services and all of the people that are in those services for a year's time, it would be thousands of people. That's a lot of opportunity. And I thank the Lord for it, that I've got the opportunity to do that. But I sometimes wonder about that. Would not it be better if I found some little band of disciples somewhere who really could use somebody to come and devote himself completely to the Lord's work in their midst, and have a greater impact, perhaps, on just a few people, rather than having a little bit of impact on a lot of people? As men, we tend to think that the more impact you can have, the better that is, always. And that's why many of us are losing our family. It's not always a matter of how many people we're impacting, but how deeply are we impacting those that we have some influence with. And if we don't have time to be having significant impact upon our family because of all this other stuff that we're doing, even if we're out winning the Nobel Peace Prize, we lose our families because we didn't have time to nurture those relationships. And it takes time to do that. It can't be done on the run. Then we will have misspent our life with wrong priorities. Well, it's a matter of balance, isn't it? All of these topics this week involve balance, and that's the difficult thing to do. It's not a matter of either or. It's a matter of making the adjustments to make the balance better when we see the need for that. It's a matter of, our overcommitment is a failure of perspective. We don't accurately see how one set of activities is related to the others. We can be so short-sighted into thinking, this is so important, I've got to do this, and we've sacrificed that when really the sacrifice should be going in just the opposite direction. And it is no easy task to live a balanced life in this complex age. If you think I'm saying tonight this is easy, and I found it to be easy, and you need to do it because it's easy for me, you're mishearing me. It's difficult. This is hard. My brother several years ago took up juggling. I don't know why, but he thought that would be a fun thing to do. So when you'd visit him on his coffee table, he had these little cushions that he practiced his juggling with. I was in his home one time, and I picked up one of those and started throwing it up, and I could catch it every time. I said, "Phil, this is easy." He said, "Well, yeah, juggling one thing is easy. Pick up all the rest of the six of those, and you see how you do." Life involves more than one priority. We don't have the luxury of just juggling one ball. We've got to navigate between multiple priorities and do a better job of balancing the mix. And even if you could get it balanced perfectly for about 5 minutes, it wouldn't stay that way. You constantly have to be making adjustments to bring it back into balance. That doesn't happen unless you have the honesty enough to see that an adjustment needs to be made. The prodigal son is called the prodigal son for what reason? What does the word prodigal mean? It means wasteful. He misallocated his resources. He spent a great deal on something that mattered very little. That's what wastefulness is. And we are often prodigal in our use of time. We don't prioritize and use it wisely. We just recklessly spend it here, there, and everywhere doing this, that, and the other, thinking somehow it'll all get done. And that's wasteful. That's prodigal use of your time, just as it would be if you spent your money that way. Whatever else it is we think we've got to do, we cannot forget about things like rest, spiritual nourishment, and family relationships. We've got to get better at the art of personal management. The more limited your resources are, the more important it is to allocate the resources that you do have in a wise way. And none of us has any more than 168 hours a week. That's all anybody gets. It's got to be allocated very wisely. We are stewards of the time that's entrusted to us. And I'm not so sure, but what it's harder to manage the resource of time more than it is to manage the resource of money. We've got more money than we do time. So we need to grasp the concept that Paul mentions in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 16, when he talked about redeeming the time because the days are evil. The more wicked the age in which we live, the more important it is for us to seize the best opportunities with the time that is given to us. It was Socrates, of course, who said that the unexamined life is not worth living. You don't look at what's going on rather regularly, you're going to be shocked to find out how things have turned out down the line. Not, any of you remember Stephen Covey? He passed away not too long ago. His writings were a very formative influence in my life several years ago, but I find when I mention his name to audiences anymore, nobody remembers who Stephen Covey was. Covey was a business speaker, motivational speaker, and he talked a lot about time management and priorities and things like that. And many of you have read Covey's writings, you know that he makes a distinction between important activities and urgent activities. It's a very vital distinction. A thing can be important without being urgent, and it can be urgent without being important. For example, writing a valid will might be very important, but it's not urgent. You don't have to do it before you go to bed tonight, so it's easily procrastinated. If you have a flat tire on the freeway on the work tomorrow morning, that's urgent. That will have to be tended to right then, but in the greater scheme of life, it's not very important. What tends to happen is that our lives tend to be dominated by the merely urgent, and the important gets squeezed out. Covey got that distinction between the urgent and the important from a little tract, a little booklet that came out many years ago, written by Charles Hummel, called The Tyranny of the Urgent. And this is where Covey got this point, that our lives are tyrannized, they're monopolized by all of these brush fires that are burning that have to be put out right now. And what gets squeezed out is the much more important stuff, but because it's not urgent, it can be put off until tomorrow, and it indefinitely gets put off until tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So you look at your life, somebody would track your time use for a couple of weeks, what would they see? Would they see you prioritizing what's truly important in life and disciplining yourself to spend time on those very important things, even though urgent things are waiting to be taken care of? Or would they see your life just be running to touch one base after another, your life tyrannized by the urgent? Well, I'm afraid, if you look at my life, you'd very often see too much urgency and not enough importance. It's hard to make time for the important and to realize that a lot of the urgent stuff is not really all of that urgent. That it could not be done, and the sun would still come up tomorrow morning. The Lord's life, obviously, is very instructive, isn't it? Mark 1, verse 35 says, "In the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed." Luke 5, verse 16, "So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed." Luke 6, verse 12, "It came to pass in those days that he went out to the mountain to pray and continued all night in prayer to God." It's a choice between prayer and sleep. Which is important and which is urgent. Sleep tends to be urgent, doesn't it? When you're dead tired, it's urgent to get some sleep. The Lord understood, however, that prayer is more important than sleep, even when sleep may be urgent, that there are times when when the important would trump the urgent matter of even bodily rest to nourish one's relationship with the Heavenly Father. As a result of the lifestyle that he led, Jesus had the immense spiritual strength that was needed to survive his ordeal in Gethsemane on the night before his crucifixion. When the big test came, he was ready for it because he was strong, having lived a life that took time for spiritual strength. Paul's instructions to Timothy about meditate on these things. It's 1 Timothy 4, verse 15. Meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them that your progress may be evident to all. No coincidence that things like meditation are linked to Timothy making progress. And from a scriptural standpoint, the ideal life for the Christian would be the quiet and peaceable life. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 2. It'd be a step in the right direction for many of us even to admit that that would be the good life. In our modern urban environments, we wear our busyness as a badge of honor. We look down on rural people who have a simple life. You're not as with it as we are. You're not as busy as we are because you really don't have a life. We're busy because we're important. We don't even aspire. We don't even think the quiet and peaceful life will be something that we'd like to have unless it's at the very end of life after we've done all this important stuff that we think we want to do and there's nothing left, then we might rest for a few years. And how ridiculous that is. So Jesus' blessing on the pure in heart in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8 is an expression of his desire that we not only be clean and innocent in our thinking, but that our hearts be free of any distracting concerns, any busyness that would pull our hearts away from their pure devotion to him. Well, we are all busy, aren't we? As I say, there is no turning back the hands of time. But it is impossible to stay as busy as most of us are and stay strong spiritually if we do not take the time that it takes to remain strong spiritually. The effort to try to be as busy as we are and still stay strong spiritually is not going to happen. For most of us, we're a train wreck waiting to happen. The attempt to do that is extremely dangerous. For most of us, the rat race is unwinnable. We're foolish to think that we are the exceptions, we are the people who can do all of this and still be spiritually strong. So let me read to you a very creative take on Psalm 23. You may have seen this called "The Lord is my pace setter." This is not scripture. This is not a new translation of Psalm 23. This is simply a point that somebody makes by writing a little piece of poetry patterned after the 23rd Psalm. Here it is. "The Lord is my pace setter. I shall not rush. He makes me stop and rest for quiet intervals. He provides me with images of stillness which restore my serenity. He leads me in ways of efficiency through calmness of mind, and his guidance is peace. Even though I have a great many things to accomplish each day, I will not fret, for his presence is here. His timelessness, his all-importance will keep me in balance. He prepares refreshment and renewal in the midst of my activity by anointing my head with his oils of tranquility. My cup of joyous energy overflows. Surely harmony and effectiveness shall be the fruit of my hours, for I shall walk in the pace of my Lord and dwell in his house forever." Well, that's an ideal. I don't know of anybody who could read that and say, that's the way my life is. It would be a rare person. But that's the goal. To be centered, to be devoted to the Lord, to have a serene center at the calm of this frantic activity that's going on around us, to have the self-discipline to simply push the pause button frequently and say, time out for spiritual strength. And in the midst of activity such as King David would have had in his life, to be able to say, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. In our busy age, we really do need to do what the song says, take time to be holy. So may God help us to get a better grip on what's going on in our lives. Well, that's the lesson for tonight. We only have one left, if I've counted correctly, and that's tomorrow night, Wednesday evening. And we'll think tomorrow evening about our shortage of personal evangelism. And not just to think about the fact that we need to be doing more personal evangelism, but to think about the damage that the devil can do in our lives when we sit down and quit doing what the Lord would want us to do about sharing the gospel. We'll think about it as a problem that can produce other problems. So hope that you will be able to be with us tomorrow night. Thank you for being here. We have several who are visiting with us. Donnie and Karen Mangrum are with us tonight from out at Fry Road. Donnie's one of their elders out there, and I've known them for many, many years and enjoyed having several gospel meetings out there, and glad to have them with us and others who are visiting. We're pleased that you've come to encourage us. But you may be visiting tonight and you're not a member of the Lord's church. Maybe you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. Wouldn't it be wonderful for you to do the thing tonight that you know you should do? You've studied your New Testament. You know that the Lord requires that you receive His forgiveness on His terms. His terms require that you confess your faith, repent of your sins, and be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of those sins. Until you meet those conditions, you're going to be in a lost condition. Why let that linger 1 hour longer? Let us know of your desire to obey the gospel, receive the forgiveness of your sins, and have the hope of living a very different life in this world. Between now and the time for heaven, you'll have the best that this world has to offer, but beyond the boundaries of this world, you'll have the hope of a life that is much better when this one is dead and gone. If we can assist you in obeying the gospel, or if you are a Christian, but you need to be encouraged to be more faithful, then we'd ask you to come and let us know how we can help you. Right now, as we stand and sing the invitation song.